This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
It's a very great honour and a pleasure to welcome Eric Bogle to the program. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Pav. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. One thing about a Scotsman, Eric, you can be living here for 50, 100 years, you still wouldn't lose your Scottish accent, would you?
No, well, I mean, I found it very advantageous when I first came in 1969. It seemed to attract women.
I do hear this, Eric, from other Scotsmen I know. Good luck to you. It's such a lovely accent. You hang on to it as long as you can. Look, someone wanted to say, I thought this was a Pogue song. The Pogues did a great version of it, but no, it's certainly yours.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard the Pogues version, Elvis Costello produced the Rum Sorin and the Lash.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was an LP back then. And he actually phoned me when I lived in Gawler, South Australia.
Yeah.
And he said, "G'day, Eric, this is Elvis here." And I thought he meant the real one. And anyway, he told me about the program, the recording of the song by Shane and the Boys. And he sent me a tape. This is how long it was, a cassette.
Yeah.
And when I listened to it, I thought, well, that's different. At first, I grew to like it very much, actually, but at first I was a bit
shocked?
Yeah, but...
And they changed a few of the lyrics, too, I noticed.
Oh, that never bothers me. I mean, The songs are sort of blank canvas, really. You just write what you like.
And Shane's going to put his own interpretation on anything they would have sung, I thought. And that's not too bad. It was very sad. I nearly played the Pogues because of the Shane McGowan connection, the fact that he passed away last year. And what a fantastic singer. And they certainly did a terrific version of that song, Eric.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I say, I grew to like it very much. My second favourite version.
Yes, well, probably mine too, after hearing yours today. I've got to ask you, who's playing piano on that song?
I have no idea.
on your version?
No, I mean, I think it was... I can't remember, to be honest. You're talking... I mean, I'm an old man, Pav. Give me some slack here. It's 4 o'clock in the bloody morning, you know.
Sorry, Eric. Well, whoever you are, if you're listening, you're a very good piano player. No?
I'm sure he is. Or she.
I'm going to have to go back and have a look, I think, Eric. Anyway, it's a fantastic version, and certainly my favourite version of that song. It's such a powerful song. A lot of your songs are, and you obviously dig into a lot of wartime history, a lot of war stories to make such powerful lyrics and make such incredible connection to the stories that are coming out of wartime. And that song was certainly one of them. It was on your first album, so it's held up pretty well, you'd have to say, after all these years.
Well, I was really surprised because, I mean, the impetus behind the song initially was the Vietnam War.
Okay.
I was living in Canberra at the time, and I was fairly involved in the moratorium marches and all that sort of stuff. And I thought time was right for an anti-war song, and it is that. It's not anti-soldier, as some people seem to think, but it's certainly anti-war.
So we're talking to Eric Bogle this morning on the program about his music, about his passionate approach to Anzac Day. It means a lot to you this day, doesn't it, Eric?
Well, it means a lot to any free-thinking person. I think the past 10, 15 years or so, it's been commercialised to some degree. It's been Anzacked, if you like. Some people would describe it. It's become a media event more than a commemorative event. That's true up to a point. I mean... there's two Anzac Days that have been real favourites of mine. One was, of course, in Gallipoli in 2015. I was there for the 100th commemorative stuff, and I sang the band played Ross Matilda at Gallipoli, and it was probably the highlight of my musical career. Mm. The other was in a wee town called Balmoral in Victoria. Population, I don't know, not many. And they had a typical small-town Anzac Day parade. You know, the school band played, and we had tea and sandwiches in the RSL afterwards.
Yeah.
And there was not a camera in sight, and no media at all. Just a small community celebrating, commemorating Anzac Day. And it was moving and it was nice. It was local. It was Australian. And I still remember it. It was organised by the local police sergeant.
And they managed to get you along. That's pretty good work.
Well, they asked me. I mean, yeah, I thought, well, you know, I've got nothing better to do. I mean, we'll travel to Victoria.
Good on you. So, well, any chance you could come down and play a gig in my backyard, Eric? I'm just asking.
Yeah, well, I was young and stupid then. Now I'm old. I mean, you know, you get spare $500 lying about that.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do there. Hey, look, there isn't just And the Band Played Waltzing Matilda. You've got a catalogue of songs that document Australians during war. We did a program a couple of weeks back where we were talking about songs that really hit you hard and almost bring you to tears, and your name just kept coming up, Eric. One of the songs that was mentioned quite regularly and was mentioned tonight as well earlier was a song called As If He Knew, As If They Knew, about leaving the horse, leaving the horses behind in World War One. What's the name of the track?
As If He Knows, it's called.
As If He Knows.
And, yeah, it's, again, like most of my songs are drawn from actual events. And it was about a horse called Banjo who was in Palestine with his soldier mate. And, of course, people know that after the, when the war, when the boys came home from Palestine especially, the horses, all the horses that went overseas weren't allowed to come back to Australia because of quarantine regulations. And in many cases, the horses were sold or given away, but in other cases, they were shot. And it's it happened in America and Britain. It wasn't a peculiarly Australian experience, but, you know, the men knew why they were there and suffering. But one of our less attractive pursuits, which is war, is when we co-opt animals. You know, dogs, pigeons, horses, mules, to pursue our obscene pursuit of war, and that really gets to me.
Yeah, and it got to the diggers too, because they formed incredible relationships with these animals who saved their lives on countless occasions, and then the tragic situation of having to, you know, either sell them or put them down before they left. It's just a heartbreaking scene, and one that you've captured very well, I would have thought, in your song. Very well, perhaps not the right words, but it's just heartbreaking. You listen to that song and it really puts you on the edge of wanting to burst into tears. It's such a sad story.
Well, again, it was, you know, motivated by a real person, Elijah Conn, who was in the 7th Flight Horse during the war, and he was talking about his horse, Banjo, during an interview on Anzac Day. And it was that article in the Melbourne newspaper that spurred the song.
Do you find, you know, because you played a lot of gigs, do you ever find when you play these songs that people do actually start tearing up during renditions?
Yeah. Oh, yes, especially that one. I mean, I've got a couple of fans in Adelaide who as soon as I, you know, I announce I'm going to sing the song, they leave. And they come back after I finish the song. I mean, they just can't handle it at all. Mind you, a lot of people leave my concerts.
Oh, come on.
But, yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I write songs, or where I pitch my songs, are to human emotions. You know, I don't write dance music, you know, hip-hop or whatever. I write songs for people to listen to and hopefully emotionally react to. That's where I aim at, the heart and the soul, you know, not the fear, the groin. And that, when you pick those specific targets, you hopefully get an emotional reaction to a lot of what you're saying.
You certainly do, I'll tell you. Look, someone wants to know, Bill wants to know, is Eric a friend of your mate Alex Burns? Do you know Alex Burns, the Scottish guitarist? No?
It's not. Not a name that's familiar.
Next time you're in town, I'll introduce you, mate.
Okay.
Thank you for all your songs. This is from Kaz. I loved your gig with Michael Waugh at Warragul. That's from Kaz.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, Michael's a good Australian songwriter.
Okay. And I got here, I've seen Eric Bogle in concert many times over many years. I already have tickets for his show in Geelong in July. Thanks for having him on. That's from Lois in Coburg. That's very exciting. You're doing a tour that takes in a lot of dates.
Well, initially, this was going to be a retirement year. And my wife begged me not to do it.
Because she wants the income, or just because she wants to get you out of the house?
No, she
wants
to get
you out of
the house.
Yeah, wants to get you out of the house, yeah.
And I thought, well, if you make definitive statements like I'm going to retire, this is my last gig, blah, blah, blah. These retirement tours are just an ego trip, really. So I thought, you know, I will retire probably sooner rather than later, but this business retires you rather than another way around.
So you're not going to do a last lap and then a second last lap and a third last lap?
No, I'll know when it's, you know, time to sort of pack up my tent and, you know, wander off into the night, but it's not yet. So I'll keep on going until I fall over, basically. That shouldn't be too far.
I reckon it sounds like you're young and sprightly as ever, Eric. So it could be a couple of national tours left in you, I reckon.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. And looking forward to seeing this one when it comes around the country. Going to most states, in fact. I don't think you're going to West Australia, which is unfortunately for all the fans you've got over there, but going just about everywhere else.
Yeah, well, we decided to, you know, hit and run. Western Australia, I'll be going there to visit friends, but I'm not sure if I'm going to. I've not been there since pre-COVID, you know, and you begin to lose track of your friends and lose track of time.
Look, I reckon if you get over to West, you'll probably announce a sneaky gig on the way through, so keep your eyes peeled if you're in that part of the country. Very lucky to have Eric Bogle AM with us this morning, singer-songwriter. I've got a text here, Eric, that says, are you coming to Tassie for a few shows as well? Look, I've missed out. Now, you're not going to Tassie either, so it's West Australia and Tassie you're going to miss out.
Well, I was in Tassie a couple of times last year, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to stay in a welcome.
You didn't want to saturate the market in Tasmania.
Well, I spent my honeymoon in Tasmania way back in 1972, so it's a, you know, I've got a soft spot for the place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Probably reminded you of the old Bonnie Hills of Scotland a bit.
Oh, well, it doesn't rain quite as much in Tasmania as it does in Scotland. I mean, I was at the Bonnie Hills last year. I went back to Scotland for a while, just 3 weeks to visit my sister, and it was beautiful and crowded. Unfortunately, the rest of the world seems to have discovered Scotland, and I couldn't move for tourists, of which I was one.
Serves you right. But look, yeah, I've heard that. Wonderful country to visit. Beautiful place and very proud heritage. And all the Scots I know, they certainly hold the flag up high. Owen wants to have a chat. G'day, Owen.
Yes, good morning, Michael and Eric. It's an amazing honour and privilege to be talking to one of the, I think, defining artists of our times. I want to say that, I think Eric's songs are so beautiful, and what I like the most about his wartime songs, as well as catching a lot of the pain and the suffering that goes on during war, I like the way it captures the essence of the utility of war as well, and this is, I think, particularly to Oliver and the band, so Waltz and Matilda, but I really find the song Greenfields of France beautiful, and the way in the last two stanzas you talk about, you know, a whole generation that was butchered, and you know, you ask the question, did those who fought in World War One really think the war would end wars, and how it's just kept going on, and you just captured it so beautifully and eloquently, I think better than most people could.
Look, we get a lot of requests for Greenfields of France, and it is at the finished song. The Furies did a wonderful version of it, Eric. Another song that must be very proud of.
Yes, good morning, Alan. Thank you for those comments. Much appreciated. Yeah, the other song was engendered by a visit to the Western Front, you know, way back in 1975. And again, I was reiterating the sheer stupidity of it all and the waste of it. I mean, when you walk through those endless military cemeteries in France and Flanders, you just have to marvel at the stupidity and the waste of it. And you walk along all these gravestones and you see the ages of the wee boys that are buried there, and you think, my God, what was it all about, you know, and what did it achieve? Even at my age, I'm still asking these questions. What did it achieve? Because I can't, you know, achieved sort of proof that, you know, there was a very brave young men and women out there. But that's about it. I mean,
there was a political agenda to it. The fact that they went off and it was a noble cause that they were fighting for, at least that's what they believed at the time, that they were fighting for a noble cause. And in many ways, that's the most important thing. But not only that, if you have a look at the political map pre-World War One, the fact that there were only one or two or three democracies in the world at that stage, then after World War One, a lot of those empires had been broken down and those countries ended up taking up democracy. So in many ways, it was a war that was fought for freedom, and I can see some reasons behind why people went there and were so passionate about the cause. It's taken me a long time to come to that understanding, though, I feel, Eric.
Well, I think, well, yes, you have a fair point there, but the world was different back then, no doubt about it. But what tended to happen was that what they fought for really happened. It didn't happen immediately. It happened sort of years, months after the war finished, and the politicians still used the wars for their own ends, basically, as they do. I'm not. There are good politicians and ones that care, but they let the young men down, I thought, you know. If you look at what Australia became, and it had the chance to become so much more, I think, and then all the ideals that the boys brought home and the hopes and the dreams didn't happen, and 20 years later we're back in the middle of it. So I take it with a pinch of salt, those who defend honour and freedom, to be honest. The boys did their best, and they were let down, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, probably let down by high command, certainly in Gallipoli, and high British command. It seems that that's been well documented, that the Australian troops were cannon fodder in many ways on the landing of Gallipoli. But, again, that's almost another story. What I think is you capture so well in your music is these stories, these individual stories, and you know, there's stories certainly with the war backdrop there, but they tell much more than that.
Well, what I do with most of my songs, especially when you're talking about the big picture, is I personalise it. I mean, No Man's Land is about one particular soldier. Banbury Wars Matilda, they're much the same. And that brings it home to people. I mean, if you talk in terms of millions of dead young men, it's too much for a wee human brain to encompass, you know, unless you've been around these cemeteries in northern France. And so if you bring it down to one individual that people can identify with, then the song becomes more personal, I think. That's what I tried to achieve in those sort of songs, is make the, you know, give the individual a name if possible, and then tell his or her story. And people identify with that. And they identify with the individual, with the mass, they find it more difficult.
Yeah.
That's always been a sort of, you know, a reason I do these sort of things.
No, good, great explanation. You're right, it's impossible to get your head around how many people were lost, millions of people that were lost in the war. It's mind-boggling, really.
Well, I mean, we talk about, you know, Australian soldiers being thrown away in Gallipoli by incompetent British officers, which is true up to a point. And then you look at how those incompetent British officers threw their own country's soldiers away as well. So the Australians weren't the only victims of that.
No, certainly some of the tactics, the fact that they went in there, you know, thinking it was going to be a cavalry charge. And so there was a lot that they did wrong, the British High Command, during World War One. Look, we'll head to Bob in Campbell. G'day, Bob.
Good morning, Pav. Oh, and good morning, Eric. My God, I'm getting to speak with you. You've made my day, week, and year, let me tell you.
Yeah, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Just talking about it being Gallipoli, I've been to Gallipoli, been through the Villers Bretonneux and other places, through the battlefields of France, and when you see the all those headstones there, that they've been put in there by the Australian government with the war graves, it just brings home to you the stupidity of it, really, and how close they were at Gallipoli. And, Eric, I was fortunate enough to be in the audience the night that you released, and it was you putting out your new CD, and you sang It's As If He Knows. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there would have been a dry eye in the house. It's just sensational.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah,
and you reckon that was the first time he played it, Bob?
Yeah. Yes. Well, Eric had introduced it as saying that he'd finished it and he's putting out a new CD, and this was the first time you're doing it. And Eric, another one I think you're doing for the first time was Elizabeth.
Oh yes.
You told us her background, and you know, her parents were in the room that night.
I remember that well.
Where was this gig?
In Melbourne. The little place is no longer there. It got something happened to it, but it finished up having to close. And it was a relatively small small room, everyone sitting around tables. And
do you remember the name of the venue?
No, I don't. Well, Pav, if I think of it, I'll send you through a message.
Gee, what a treat, Bob, to be able to see Eric in his early days. And you obviously kept an eye on his career over the years.
Oh, good Lord, yes. And Eric, I bought the CD and you've signed it for me. But also, you know, the other one, Leaving Nancy. That's one of my favourites for many years, because there's some similarity there. I left WA to come to the eastern states, and I went back from time to time. But unfortunately, when Mum became sick and I didn't get back in time to see her, I missed her by one day.
Yeah. Hey, look. It's always the fear of a migrant, or, you know, when you don't live at home. I mean, my mother and father actually both died when I got back to Scotland in 1974. I took Carmel and my wife to meet them, of course, and they both died when I was in Scotland. People keep saying, oh, that was lucky. And I know what they mean. You know, it's the fear of the migrant. You're 10,000 miles away, and the world's a smaller place than it used to be, but even so, you think, oh, dear, what happens when they get sick or they need me and I'm not there? So Leaving Nancy was, I think, my second or third song that I wrote after I came to Australia.
Another song on your first album. I'll tell you, it was a pretty strong first album there, Eric.
I mean, I was learning my trade, really. Recording studios, I always hated them. I make recordings because that's what musicians are supposed to do, and that's how you get your songs out to the wider public, of course. The mechanics of recording I've always disliked intensely. I like to have the audience suffering in front of me, you know, that really brings the beast out in me. And you know, live performances, any musician will tell you, is the best drug in the world.
Yeah. Bob, keep an eye out, because Eric's coming to Melbourne in June.
Oh, well, yes, I heard that. I will be scouring it in a few hours' time. But, Eric, if I may, look, thank you very much from me, because you've been a part of me and the music that I love, and I think you've done a wonderful job across the years. So thanks very much for everything you've done.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Thanks for that. Much appreciated.
Hey, Bob, was it the Continental in Prahran where you saw him?
No, it was in Hawthorne.
Yeah, that's right.
It was on the corner, and the place got someone hit a fire hydrant out the front, and then the place got flooded not too long afterwards, and they never flooded out.
Another venue bites the dust. That wasn't the night that Eric was playing there. He had a few.
The night after.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
No, pleasure. Thanks very much.
Good on your tar. There you go. It's good to hear that memory, I reckon, Eric.
Well, that song, Elizabeth's song, is quite a special one to me. And it was about a cot death. And this young couple came to me during one of my gigs and said, look, you know, our daughter Elizabeth, she died when she was, you know, 2 or 3 months old. And we love her and miss her, but what helps to prolong the pain is that our friends and family don't talk about her. They feel that talking about her would hurt us too much, and then frankly want to talk about the memories we have of her. And would I consider writing a song about this? And I thought, oh dear me, there's a heavy brief. So I wrote this song called Elizabeth's Song, which I was, in the end, I was very happy with. They sent me a photograph of Elizabeth's grave, and they had the chorus of my song on the headstone, and a few little things, you know. It was just a, you know, and whenever I get down and think, what the hell am I doing this for? And I remember things like that. And
I can hear the emotion in your voice there. Probably you get a bit of that too when you play that song live, I'd imagine.
Well, again, it's a song that a lot of people find painful to listen to. Mm. You know, I've got to accept that as part of the price for the sort of stuff that I do. I mean, I do have songs about dead dogs and cats and things like that, and funny songs. But, you know, as I said earlier, most of my songs demand some sort of emotional response from the listener. It's not a passive experience to go and sit and listen to me. Not a particularly pleasurable one at times, but that's how it is.
Eric, if we only had happy songs in the world, I reckon it'd be a pretty benign place. It'd be a much worse place. So we really need songs like yours, storytelling songs, to come through. And, you know, if they're sad, if they bring people to tears, that's what a good book will do, or a good movie, and a good song will do it as well. I'll read you a couple of these texts, mate. It says, Eric, my girlfriend and I still remember your performance at Port Arlington, the National Celtic Festival in 2017. Enjoyed it immensely.
Well, I mean, messages like that pick you up. I mean, here's me, 4 o'clock in the morning. I had to check to see there's an actual time goal, 4 a.m. in the morning, before I agreed to do this interview. And, you know, I should be in bed, sleeping the sleep of the innocent.
Hey.
But you know, the people who've rang it, rang up, and I've taken the trouble to text and say they like this and that. They pick you up and they carry you on to the next song, you know. Now I'm beginning to feel quite pleased that I agreed to this.
You've got a lot of fans out there, mate. Like I said the other day when we were talking about songs that get you right there, your name constantly came up with a big list of tracks that you've written. So you're an important songwriter, mate, and you wouldn't have an AM after your name if you weren't, so... don't mind me telling you that. Bob probably wants to tell you the same thing as well. G'day, Bob.
Hi, yeah. 67 years of age, Eric, and I finally rang up a television station. Two quick anecdotes. Firstly, around about 1980, I wanted to use your song and the band played Waltz and Matilda for an Anzac song at a school I was at, and my principal forbid it. He said it wasn't appropriate, so... Imagine how I felt about 6 or 7 years later when it was in ABC songbook, and the rest is history. But more importantly, Eric, and you may or may not remember this, for years and years I used Claire Campbell as a song with your story from the live album and what you always told at every concert for Senior Citizens Day. And I started a week before it would tell your story. And 1 year, 30 children were so overwhelmed. They wrote poems and letters, and I sent it to your recording company on a wing and a prayer. And within a month, I got an envelope back. Listeners, this man, he personally wrote to every single child in that class.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely gobsmacked, and especially the boy that you singled out for a poem. And it's a long time ago, Eric, and I had to ring up and thank you again for that and the many years of using your great songs as a bit of a impetus for children's writing. So that's why I rang. Thanks, buddy.
You're a champion. Thanks, Bill. Thanks. No, I remember that. I remember that well. I mean,
That story got me, Eric, I've got to say.
Well, it's the bonus of what I do. I mean, forget the money. Please do forget the money.
Yeah, we know
forget
that.
Everything. It's supposed to be associated with a musician. And it's reactions like that, human reactions. I mean, it's a bridge between me and my fellow human beings on this planet. And, you know, that particular song, I wrote it actually originally. It's a true story about a lady called Claire Campbell who died alone and lay in her house in Erskineville in Sydney for a year before anybody bothered to find out what had happened to her. It's a common story in big cities. And I wrote a song back then called Reason for It All, and it was a question, not a statement. And I wrote it for my friend, my longtime buddy, John Campbell Monroe, and I to sing. And John, it's a question and response song. And John and I sang it for years. And John died 6 years ago, next month. And I stopped singing it. I couldn't imagine myself performing it without John there. And then just recently, my fiddler, Emma Luker, who's a wonderfully talented musician, she asked if she could have a go at John's part. And initially I said no. And then I thought, well, why not? It's not, you know, Moses' Tablet from the Mountain. It's a song. And we've resuscitated the song, and it's given me so much pleasure to do it again. And when I sing it, it reminds me of John. And that's what music does. It brings people from the past and the present into sharp focus. You know, Leaving Nancy, we talked about earlier, I wrote that song for my mother in 1972, I think. She died in 1975. Now, I've sang that song many times since then. We're talking a long time, 40, 50 years ago. And every time I sing it, she's right there again. You know, she's in sharp focus again. And that's the magic of music, you know.
And words. Look, and I think, you know, that would be probably a lot of the characters in your songs. You'd probably feel them there with you as you're singing it because they're so, you know, they're so descriptive and to keep these stories alive and keep the spirits of these people alive. Look, I read you a couple of texts. Andy wanted to say, I've watched some reactions to And the Band Played Waltzing Matilda from people all over the world, and they all come to tears. I've got here as well from Heather in Adelaide. I've often thought of all the young women in the World War II era who never married since so many young men were killed and were condemned to a life of an old maid looking after their families. That's some tragic. I'm sure you've covered that in your songs over the years at some point, Eric.
Well, yes. I mean, funny shit. I wrote a song called Jingle Jangle, and it was pure supposition. And it was about a woman in Adelaide. I read her obituary in the local paper, and she was a woman who, you know, was full of good works and much appreciated and loved in Adelaide society, spent her time helping other people. And she was engaged to a young man during the war, who never came back. So I wrote this total supposition, you know, that, you know, I spent all last night together and, you know, I wrote off experts went jingle, jangle and all that sort of stuff. And it's all, and it was just a tribute to those women who lived that lost somebody and lived that life of not a solo or an isolated life.
In many ways, the victims of war as well, Eric. As you're saying, look, you're about to do this national tour, as I mentioned. One of the final dates on your tour is you're going to do three concerts and present 60 songs in chronological order. It's a special concert you're doing in Adelaide.
Yeah,
the Trinity Sessions.
Yeah. I wish you hadn't reminded me of that.
bit of rehearsing to do, mate.
Well, we're actually doing it this weekend up in a gig. A friend of mine owns a winery in Mia Mia, the Burke and Wills Winery, and I've done many concerts there. It's a musical, you know, soft spot for me, and so we're trying it out there. And I've been rehearsing in the land for the last couple of weeks, and we're still a bit nervous about it, but we'll just sit down, open our mouths, let our bellies rumble, and hope for the best.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be right, mate. You've done enough gigs that I think you'll
leave it up. Yeah, I've been out for a while.
You've got a couple of good musicians, too, playing with you there that you've been playing with for many years, so I reckon they'll carry you through.
I've relied on good musicians to carry me through all my career path, so nothing is different. John Monroe carried me on his back for 40 years. That's why I still miss him so much, I think. He was more than a musician, of course. He was my brother, you know, from another. Anyway.
I know, he's a great collaborator of yours, and you must miss him terribly. A couple of texts here. Kaz says, wow, what a lovely story about the kids. That's why we love him like we do. That's well said. Man of my similar vintage, please say hello. That's from the Bard from the Scrub, Ben Eggleton, who wants to say good day to you, Eric.
Good. Yeah, Ben.
Of course, you know Ben, do you?
Well, the name's very familiar. I'm just looking up the police records here.
I think Ben does a bit of writing, so you may well know him.
Yeah, I think I do, yeah.
Danny wanted to say, music is our bridge from our past to our present and imaginings of tomorrow. It's been lovely listening to you. That's from Danny in East Bentley as well. And Capers in Hawthorne was apparently the venue.
Yes.
There you go. There's always someone out there who knows.
That's part of the problem. You know, you go on a stage and you make some definitive statement. First time I've been here, you know, it's a pleasure to be here and whoop whoop for the first time. And somebody will shout, you were here 20 years ago. And you go, oh, yeah. So, yeah, the audience keep you honest. I can assure you about that.
Troubles of a songwriter, mate. That's what you get if you play so many gigs and write so many good songs. It's your fault.
Well, I mean, it's been a hell of a journey. I'm not finished yet.
Hey, so look, just quickly, what does Anzac Day mean to you?
It means that, you know, I answered a lot of questions I shouldn't really answer because I'm not a historian, I'm a songwriter. It means, you know, because I've had such an affinity with the Anzacs since the first time I went to northern France. I mean, I knew a lot about them before I came to Australia. I mean, I knew about the Lone Pine and, you know, Simpson the Donkey and all that sort of stuff because of my interest in World War One. So I made it my business when I first came across here to find out more about the Anzacs. So. Being part of the journey with me, this is the point.
Look, it's been great talking to you this morning, Eric, and look, appreciate your time very much. Thanks. Have a great Anzac Day. We'll catch you again soon, all right?
Okay, Matty. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great day today.
Eric Bogle there, AM.